You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Okay, spring training is starting to wind down a little bit, and teams are getting ready for opening day. I am Allison Futter from MLB.com, and in the NL West, good times are rolling in some places, not so good times in others. The Giants are still trying to get that starting rotation together, and the Dodgers have been hit with a lot of injuries and are trying to get healthy as quickly as possible before the regular season starts. Let's take a listen.
And let's start with, well, let's start with Andre Ethier. So this is a pretty big blow to the team, out for a while with that fracture. So can you take us through what happened there?
Yeah, he fouled the ball off his leg, and the initial x-rays didn't reveal anything, but the pain persisted. They did a bone scan, and they found a fracture, and he'll be out 10 to 14 weeks.
Okay, so what you know, what does that do for the team? I mean, you know, he's obviously you know, a big part of the equation here. So where do they go from here in his absence?
Yeah, it's going to be a big drop off in run production, I'm sure. Carl Crawford will probably get the first chance to step in. He's coming off a bad year, and he's not having a good spring. So they've got Scott Van Slyke, who can face left-handers. He's got a lot of power from the right-hand side. But they're going to miss Ethier. He really had a good bounce-back year last year. Hasn't had quite the same power that he had, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but he was very productive last year, especially against right-handed pitching. So it's a loss.
Okay. And then moving on to just some things with Bolsinger. We just want to talk about this a little bit. So he had a strained oblique, which will keep him from opening the season. So Andrew Friedman just announced that. And he had kind of moved into a spot when Beachy was developing some elbow soreness. So what are the options now to fill that fifth spot in the rotation?
Yeah, they're really deep down on the depth chart now. I mean, it hasn't been a good spring for the Dodgers. They've had a lot of injuries. They thought they had depth in pitching, and these guys just keep breaking down. You know, they lost Anderson to back surgery. Now Bolsinger's out. He was one of the fifth starter candidates. So was Beachy. Neither one of them will probably be the fifth starter. So now they're going. They may have to go back to Zach Lee, who they already sent out to the minor leagues. It may be Carlos Frias, who they've never decided whether he's a reliever or starter. Their 19-year-old Mexican sensation, Julio Urias, is also over in the minor league side, and there's going to be the temptation to use him because he's so effective and dominant. But he's also at 19, not just 19, but he only threw 80 innings last year. So there's no way they're going to jump him up to 180 or 200 innings this year. He's got to be managed properly. So they're in a real bind for fifth starter. You know, the only good news is in April, you don't need starters every time through the rotation. They'll use one the first time, and then they can skip it, and they can skip one later. You know, they're really under siege here with injuries, and the starter is really feeling it.
Chris, we are nearing that point where you start looking at the calendar and seeing that March is coming to a conclusion, so that's a happy time for a lot of people who want the regular season to start. I had to chuckle a little bit when I was reading the story on Hunter Pence, realizing that he might have to scale back a little bit and not play all 162. And the only reason I was chuckling is because I knew him as a young player, and that wouldn't have gone over very well. But he's going to be 33 in April, and he's had his share of injuries. So he seems to be coming to terms with or at peace a little bit for the fact that there might be some days off coming for him this season.
You know, I just now, while listening to you talk, I just had this thought. I wonder if the future Mrs. Pence has anything to do with this. You know, fiancés, you know, significant others or whatever, you know, sometimes they talk a little sense into people. And I just wonder if she had a role in making him realize, hey, you know, you're not a kid anymore. You can't play 162. You can play 152, 155, you know, but it's, sheer folly to play. It's tough for anybody at any age to play 162. It's amazing how anybody does it. I remember when I covered the Astros, and Jeff Bagwell, Craig Biggio, and Steve Finley each played 162. And after 162nd game, they all just sat slumped in front of their lockers, just absolutely drained. They almost needed a forklift to move them. And, it's just a grind, partially, physical and partially mental.
Yeah, no, it's that's a huge part of it. And, yeah, I mean, they make it look easy, and I've said that a million times, that this game is so much more complicated than it looks when you're seeing them supposedly standing on the field. You know, we've talked about this, but they're constantly moving all the time. If you look at guys playing, they're fielding their positions, they're kneeling, they're squatting, they're bending, they're running all the time. And it's funny because I do think that, like, it's true. Like Hunter, I don't know, I've not met his fiance, but I've heard a lot about her, read a lot about her. She seems to have a very good head on her shoulders. And sometimes that's what it takes to say, hey, bud, it's okay. You're still very good at what you do. And like you said, 150 games is pretty much a full season.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and then it's all about diminishing returns. If, you get a rest here and there, you're actually going to do better, than if you, even if you're a valuable player staying in the lineup, all the time, that could hurt your performance more than it helps you.
Yeah, we should know that Hunter played in only 52 games last season, and his first 2 years with San Francisco, he played in all 162. But yeah, the Giants have a vested interest in that, of course, because he's in the middle of a long-term deal, so preservation is very important. So I think that he's going to have a nice little run with them. Let's talk. This is hilarious. I'm like, Brandon Belt, and I'm reading the story, and I'm like, wait a minute. So he's really good at the Diamondbacks ballpark at spring training, which I don't know what that means, what the significance is, but it is highly humorous that he's hitting .714 over all time at Salt River Field, where the Diamondbacks play, 7 home runs, 3 doubles, 20 hits and 28 at bats. What is going on with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, again, it's probably just as much mental as physical. He just goes up there. He's just confident as heck. He thinks he should get a hit every time up, I think, when he plays there, and he practically has. It's just uncanny. And of course, add to it the effects of Arizona weather, where the ball flies a little farther than usual, and presto, you've got these home runs into it's like a 4 levels of cacti in the batter's eye and center field, and he's hitting these line drives into the 3rd level of the cacti. It's just unbelievable.
Wow. Do you think that it can get in the guy's head when he's doing really well, just like it can get in his head when he's doing poorly? Like maybe it is like something that, because there really is no way to explain that. I mean, beyond, the atmospheric conditions and all of that. But at some point, I guess he gets up to the plate and says, I pretty much hit every single thing that's thrown at me here. And it's probably got to give him a little confidence boost.
Oh, yeah. There's this saying, a pitching coach I once knew said, it's a chicken or the egg statement, but success breeds confidence and confidence breeds success. So, again, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? But things build and feed off each other, and he certainly benefits, Brandon certainly benefits from that and playing at Salt River Fields.
AJ, I want to talk a little bit about Mexico City. The Padres and the Astros are going to play in a series there this weekend. And I was just covering a series with the Rangers and the Royals at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and Nodios made a comment that it's kind of nice to break up spring training a little bit. It gets a little monotonous, and playing in front of a big crowd was the first regular season feel that they've had throughout spring training. So I guess there's an advantage, maybe, even though it seems like sort of a taxing trip to kind of get out of the routine a little bit and change things up.
Yeah, I think a few of the players are kind of viewing it that way, because you just get into such a routine here that I mean, let's be honest, spring training lasts a little longer than it probably needs to, especially for a lot of the hitters. And so it's nice for them to be able to go somewhere and kind of play a game where it's not kind of the same day-to-day crowds as the Cactus League, where it'll be fans that are pretty invested in what's going on on the field. The guys that are going, and they haven't announced, they're waiting till tomorrow to announce the full roster, but the guys that are going seem pretty excited about it. And it's good. And I know the Padres love the chance to kind of grow the Padres brand in Mexico too.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, Mexico City makes sense for teams from Houston and San Diego to be playing in for sure. And I guess it's a little bit of an extra challenge, though. I mean, not that it's a huge deal, but just you know, normally at spring training, like there'd be a round of cuts and guys would go to minor league camp, and they sort of need to keep a few extra guys, I guess, around big league camp. Not ship them out quite yet because they need to field two teams for two consecutive days because they are going to play, I believe, a split squad in Arizona also, correct?
Yeah, they'll be playing a split squad, and the pitchers in Mexico City are going to be Robbie Erlin and Cesar Vargas. And for Vargas, it's a pretty cool story. I haven't talked to him about it yet, but I will. He grew up about an hour and a half south of Mexico City, so he'll get the start in one of the games. I'm not sure which, but that'll be pretty cool for him. It's obviously the opportunity for a lot of young guys, whether they're going to Mexico City or whether they're staying here, but because the squads are split for 2 days in a row, or actually it's 3 days in a row because they'll be leaving on Friday. So Friday night's game won't be a split squad in name, but it will be for all intents and purposes. It'll give kind of some younger guys to get a chance.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. Okay, so let's talk about things that are going on in Padres camp right now. So Brandon Mauer looks like he's headed to the bullpen. He was hoping to be in the rotation, but is that pretty for sure now that he's going to be a bullpen guy?
Yeah, he's going to be a bullpen guy, and I think the biggest reason why is he has a very good slider, a good fastball. He kind of just couldn't figure out the changeup, and so he needed that third pitch maybe to be a starter. Third reliable pitch to be a starter. He also kind of experimented with a curveball. But that fastball-slider mix just lends itself to maybe a seventh-inning guy or an eighth-inning guy who will be facing hitters one time. He did a very good job of that last year, and I think another key is that the Padres feel comfortable with what they've seen from Colin Ray and Robbie Erlin, if those are the two guys that get the fourth and fifth spots. They feel comfortable enough with them that they can kind of push Mauer down to the that into the bullpen where his stuff probably fits best.
Yeah, so that was my next question. So is Pomeranz still in the mix? Is it two spots for three guys, Pomeranz, Erlin, and Ray?
Yeah, well, Brandon Morrow is going to be coming back probably in late April, and I think they want to make him, or at least there's nothing definitive on this, but they're leaning toward giving him a spot in the rotation. Pomeranz is another guy who kind of likes Mauer. His stuff might lend itself better to the bullpen, but he's been working on a cutter that's actually been pretty effective that could throw him back into the starter mix. So at this point, it's four guys for two spots, and Erlin and Ray have been good enough this spring where I don't think the Padres, their kind of inexperience isn't something that would deter the Padres. Now, maybe if Pomeranz kind of wows them in the last week and a half, he could get that spot too. But the one thing that I really liked about Colin Ray, who has lesser of the experience of those two pitchers, is he doesn't kind of pitch like he's only had a few starts in the major leagues. He attacks the strike zone. He's got a nice mix of pitches. So I think that if the Padres are confident in Ray and Erlin, then Pomeranz is probably ticketed for the bullpen also.
I'm Thomas Harding here with Chad Bettis, right-handed pitcher for the Rockies. And first of all, Chad, spring training, it goes on and goes on. The regular season will get here eventually. But at this stage, are you just dying to face some real hitters in a real game?
You know, there's still some things that I would like to work on a little bit before we get there. But, yeah, definitely excited for, you know, what's to come and the outlook for the season.
As far as you're concerned, you're coming off a good year last year. I mean, after going back and forth between starting and relieving, you finally came in as a starter, worked on some things, corrected your delivery, and then came up to the major leagues and had a strong year. What were the best things about 2015 for you?
For me, it was just, having the opportunity to come back up and and showcase what I can actually do out of the starting role. For me, that was big, and to have the belief from Holmesy and Foster, was huge, and in the sense of what we worked on last spring training to see it to come to fruition, you know, in the season, and how effective it can be. It was a blessing, and very excited to see this next year.
Just to take you back a bit to the 2014 season, things did not go well numbers-wise out of the bullpen. You were up and down between Colorado Springs and Denver. Mm-hmm. The last time they sent you down, though, that seemed to be the time that you were able to express, and they wanted to hear exactly who you were as a pitcher. Can you talk about that time, that the discussion with Walt Weiss when you went down, the decision to make you a starter full-time?
It was a closed door meeting, and Walt and I, you know, sat there, talked for a good 15 minutes, about what was going on, what I felt like was going wrong, and I felt like that was the opportunity, for myself to say something to him about, you know, how I didn't feel comfortable and how, I viewed myself as a starter. And how can we make that work?
I think at that point in your career, though, maybe you were a victim of doing too many things well coming up. You look back at your career at Texas Tech, you were able to be a starter and also closer when you weren't starting. So you came in with a whole lot of different talents there. Would you go back to your college career, maybe change that, or do you feel that because you started and relieved, it gave you more possibilities coming into pro ball?
I felt like it gave me a little bit of more possibilities, honestly. If I could have changed anything, it would have just been a starter completely. But that being said, I learned a lot, about what it takes to be a reliever at the college level. It's completely different animal up here. But that being said, there were possibilities that I had, like you said, whether I could start or relieve or close and all that stuff. It was a big learning experience for me, and in 2014, there were things that I felt like if I would have been developed as a reliever, then I think I could have possibly have had some success in 2014. Whereas, coming up through the whole minor league system and starting the whole time, it was completely different to me. But looking back on it, honestly, in 2014. There are things that and lessons that I learned in baseball and in life that it's going to carry with me throughout my life.
I look back at last season, and it seemed like there were a number of games where it's like Chad Bettis has arrived. I mean, these big games where you're pitching deep into games. There was one at home against the Giants, then the next one on the road against the Phillies. When was it that you felt like the light kind of came on for you?
I would say, when I got that call and they said that, hey, you're going to be coming back up and joining the big league club, it's your time. It's your time to seize the opportunity and to showcase what you can do. And so, for me, I think that just to have that one opportunity again, to show what I can do before, who knows what happens, And so, I really just took it upon myself, and I had a lot of support with my friends and family and the coaching staff here about just going out there and enjoying it and having a good time.
And as the year went, it seemed that you grew as a pitcher. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things you incorporated into your pitching style, the types of pitches that maybe you developed more confidence in?
I think that it all backtracks to what we worked on, which was being able to go down and away to a right-handed hitter whenever I possibly could, whenever I needed to, and that confidence that was instilled in me, was big, because everything from that point on played off of that pitch. So, I can't really say that, this pitch developed more, I used this one pitch more, or whatever, but I would say, if anything, everything played off of that down and away for me.
Steve, let's talk about Gene Segura. He's having an unbelievably productive spring. We can't look too much into numbers, but 525 is 525 if you're talking about batting averages, which is pretty cool. So how is that trade may be paying off for the Diamondbacks.
Well, Alison, I think it's one of those deals that when they acquired him, there was some concern amongst analysts out there that Segura's numbers had not been good the last year, year and a half, to whatever it is. But the Diamondbacks saw an athletic guy. They liked the way he swung the bat. And they liked his speed. They liked what he could do on the bases. And so they were really excited to get him. And so far this spring, again, you know, what do you read in the spring training numbers? Who knows? But they've been really impressed this spring with not only the way he's hit the ball, but the way he's run the bases. His defense has been good this spring. And so I think that they're definitely going to – it would shock me if he's not in the starting lineup come opening day. Whether that's at shortstop or second base, I think is still an open question this late in camp. But he's somebody who is definitely opened some eyes here at camp this spring.
And those are the kind of players, they make these acquisitions, and I mean, it was a pretty big deal when it was made, but you're not quite sure which way it's going to go. But when you're talking about a team that is pretty dead set on contending, obviously, and doing it in sort of a fast-forward motion, trying to accelerate everything and make it all happen this year, these are the kind of guys, Segura is like the exact kind of guy that they, you know, you could look back at the end of the season and say they couldn't have done it without this guy.
Yeah, it could very well be that, and I think a lot of people were surprised when the trade was made, just because they had Nick Ahmed, they had Chris Owings, but the Diamondbacks wanted to add some offense. They felt like, you know, after dealing Ender and Ciarte, that took a little bit of offense out of the lineup, and they wanted to see if they could add it somewhere else. And so it looks like that's the direction they chose to go with one of the middle infield spots, and it looks like Segura is going to nab one of those spots here.
Okay, so I'm going through a lot of the coverage from the last couple of days, and this headline obviously just screamed at me. So this monster home run that Peter O'Brien hit, not just a home run, but a monster home run. And so, of course, I had to click on the video. And we will not call this an upper deck shot because it was a lawn seat shot. That's the spring training equivalent to an upper deck shot in the middle of the season, of course, because the outfields are mostly just lawn areas where people are lounging and having a good old time out there. So that thing went really, really far, actually a little bit past the lawn. I couldn't really see that clearly, but tell me about that.
Well, yeah, that was one of those things that now that we have StatCast that just kind of confirms what your eyes see. You know, when the ball leaves the bat, you think, wow, he really hit that hard, and then you look at StatCast, and it's 120 miles an hour off the bat. And then you look at where it landed, and like you said, it was like an upper deck shot. And you look at StatCast, and it estimated 461 feet. So it was a titanic shot last night, and certainly something that kind of spiced up an otherwise kind of dragging night spring training game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not – you can only get so excited about, like, a late-game, game-tying shot at spring training, but I guess you need a couple, dramatic moments every once in a while just to make sure that everyone's still paying attention that late in the game. Okay, let's get on to just a couple ticky-tacky things. A.J. Pollock, so he's had a sore right elbow. He's not played in a major league spring game for a while now, so what's going on with him?
Well, he's been playing in some minor league games the last few days, not swinging, but just tracking pitches, playing defense. He has been throwing, and he's allowed to bunt, so he's got a couple of bunt hits. I know he's really proud of that. But they expect him to be back soon. Chip Hale, as we're recording this on Wednesday, he told us Tuesday that sooner rather than later he's going to be back out there playing, and that he will have enough time then to be ready for opening day. So we'll see what that means a day from now, 2 days from now. But certainly he'll need to get back on the field, I would think, by this weekend in order to be ready for opening day.